Welcome to the Climate Report on Forward Radio, WFMP 106.5 FM Louisville. This is Hart Hagen, your host, and we are on episode number 377. Today's topic is regenerative landscaping. To follow my work, go to harthagan.substack.com, harthagan.substack.com. To subscribe to my daily newsletter, at least for the past 72 days, I've been sending out something every single day. Interviews with interesting people and my thoughts in the form of articles and memes. The purpose of the Climate Report is to deal with glaring misconceptions that exist in the mainstream climate movement. We have a living Earth and a living climate in that life impacts our climate. Ecosystems impact our climate. Plants and animals and fungi have a dramatic effect on water cycles and temperatures. Most climate problems, such as flooding, drought, wildfires, are broken water cycles. They are broken water cycles, or they're symptoms of broken water cycles. And the single biggest missed opportunity that we have is to utilize and leverage our ability to restore water cycles, including rainfall, including something called evaporative cooling, which I will get into. But if we really wanted to cool the climate, we would utilize and leverage evaporative cooling. Evaporative cooling, which it means water comes out of plants, if you have the plants. You know, plants have a tremendous cooling effect that I'll get into. But when water evaporates, that cools the surrounding air. When water evaporates because you have plants in the vicinity, then that can cool the surrounding air by 20, 30, 40 degrees. Not so much the air, but the surfaces, which then affect the temperature of the air. But I digress. So let's talk about regenerative landscaping. What is regenerative landscaping? Regenerative landscaping is an approach to home landscaping that regenerates life by supporting pollinators, bees, butterflies, and birds. It restores soil health, it cleans the water, and creates a cool environment that tends to regulate temperatures and weather extremes while teaching us about the natural world. As opposed to what? So I've just described to you an ideal or an aspiration, as opposed to what? As opposed to the reality that we have now, which is degenerative landscaping. It's landscaping that degrades the natural environment, that provides no food for pollinators. In fact, we're poisoning our pollinators, and we're killing the soils, and we're creating a hot environment. We are precluding the possibility or the opportunity to cool the environment with plants that exhibit evaporative cooling. So what qualifies me to talk about any of this? I'll just give you my brief biography of the last 7 years or so. In 2016, I got interested in bees and butterflies, and then I became an advocate for native plants because native plants support bees and butterflies, and then I became the president of Wild Ones Louisville, which is our local advocacy group, not the only one, but one of the advocacy groups for native plants, which is to say that over 7 years of being an advocate for bees and butterflies, I've learned a thing or two. I don't know everything, but I've learned a thing or two about how to support bees and butterflies. Then in 2018, I got interested in climate change. And in 2018, I started this show, The Climate Report. So I don't know everything, but I've learned a thing or two about the climate in the last 5 years. Doing 377 episodes of The Climate Report, and I can help you separate truth from fiction, because there's a lot of misleading stuff. There's a lot of fiction related to climate. Mainly, if you ask me, you know, the mainstream news coverage about climate is such that it's mostly misleading. They are oversimplifying the problem. They are overcomplicating the solution, all of which is to make money, to sell us gadgets, and to get us to rally around major government spending that's not going to do anything for the climate, but it's going to make a few people a lot of money, and that's what it's all about. Continuing with my brief bio, in 2020 I stumbled upon something called the new water paradigm, which is a way that, how does water relate to climate? And I started to believe and continue to believe that water is more important to climate than is commonly thought. I started a group called Water and Climate on Facebook, which is now 4,400 members. It includes some, not all, but some of the world's leaders in that space who are saying that maybe, just maybe, water cycles and ecosystems are a vital aspect of addressing our climate issues. And nobody's talking about this. What's up with that? Actually, a few people are talking about it, but it rarely gets any attention or coverage in the mainstream outlets such as, you know, New York Times and the cable news, Washington Post, NPR, all these mainstream outlets. They're just all about carbon dioxide, which I think is a gross oversimplification of the problem. Fast forward to 2022, last year, is the first time I became a real gardener. I had done some landscaping in my work for the last 12 years, so I knew how to use a shovel better than most. But as far as being a real gardener, the growing season of 2022 was my first full year as a real gardener, and this is my second growing season as a real gardener. Which is to say that I can tell you, I can talk all about how easy it should be, even for a beginner. I can tell you, it wasn't so long ago that I was a beginner, and I can tell you from a beginner's standpoint what is easy and what is not so easy. I can tell you what works and what doesn't work as well. I'm here to tell you that native plant gardening and regenerative landscaping is not that hard. And my mission is to make it seem easy and fun, because it is both easy and fun. So to address the topic of regenerative landscaping, I've got 10 opportunities that this represents. So we'll talk about each of the 10 opportunities and see how far we get. Opportunity number one is the opportunity to capture rainfall. So what we want to do is to capture the most rainfall we can and reduce our runoff to almost nothing. If we do that, we can prevent flooding, we can prevent drought, or at least be very resilient in the case there is a drought, which is partly defined by a period of low precipitation. So how do we do this? How do we capture rainfall? I offer you what I call the brown, green, black method. Brown means organic matter, green means plants, and black means the carbon content of your soil. So we're going to bring in the brown, grow the green, and nurture the black. We're going to bring in the organic matter, such as wood chips or leaves. We're not going to ship out our organic matter. We're going to bring it in. So we're going to bring in the brown so we have plenty of mulch that can absorb the rainfall. We are going to grow the green. We're not going to weed too much. We're going to allow things to grow. Now, for aesthetic purposes, you might need to control some of the plant growth. But, you know, especially if it's in your backyard, just because there is a weed doesn't mean you need to pull it, because a weed is a plant. Plants take carbon dioxide out of the air and put it into the ground. Plants capture rainfall. Plants make your soil more able to nurture, to capture and hold on to rainfall. So we're going to capture rainfall by bringing in the brown, growing the green, and nurturing the black. So when I say growing the green, yes, you're going to bring in some plants. I have over 100 plant species in my front and backyard, and about half of them just volunteered. They're there because I did not cut them down. And the other half I've brought in because being in the Native Plant Society, then I have people who say, hey, I have some goldenrod I need to give away. I have some evening primrose I need to give away. I have a whole bunch of purple cone flowers that I don't have any use for. So I say, hey, yeah, I go in my car, pick them up, come home, you know, spread some mulch, dig a hole, put it in the ground, water it for a few days or weeks to get it started, and then all of a sudden I have purple cone flowers that grow this year and next year and next year. So some of the 100 or 125 plant species that I have are volunteers. Like I have, like, you know, 10 or 11 or 12 species of trees. Almost all of them are native. All but one are native, and all of them have volunteered. I have pin oak trees, I have black cherry, black walnut, hackberry, mulberry, I have catalpa trees and maple trees, all because I did not cut them down. So that's how to grow the green. Yes, you're going to plant some things, but you're also going to ease up with the cutting, ease up with the mowing, ease up with the weed eating. Certainly don't spray anything. So bring in the brown, grow the green, nurture the black. Nurturing the black means nurturing the carbon content of the soil. Darker soil is better soil usually. And so what makes soil dark and carbon rich? What makes soil dark and carbon rich is when you allow the plant to take carbon out of the air. You know, there's lots of carbon dioxide in the air. So you allow the plant to take the carbon dioxide out of the air and put it into the ground. On average, plants put about a third of the carbon. They take that carbon dioxide out of the air, they make sugars out of it, and they put about a third of those sugars into the ground. Plants invest a fair amount, a substantial portion of their energy and their carbon, you know, their carbon carbohydrates go into the ground. That's where, you know, why do they do that? Why do plants put their sugars into the ground? Because that feeds bacteria. Bacteria attracts fungi. Bacteria and fungi form the basis of a soil food web, which really needs to be studied, really needs to be talked about. The soil food web is amazingly complex and amazingly useful. The soil food web helps us to grow plants. It helps us to capture the rainwater. It helps us to avoid plant diseases. It helps deliver nutrients to the plant. And we are not treating our soil food web right. We need to treat the soil food web right. When we treat the soil food web right, then we end up with this carbon-rich soil. The soil has a lot of carbon in it. The soil has a lot of organic matter in it. And that carbon and the organic matter make the soil into a sponge which absorbs rainwater. So opportunity number one is to capture rainfall. Opportunity number two in regenerative landscaping is to harness evaporative cooling. So this gets into water. Like, water is the almost that water and ecosystems are the untold story in climate change. This is episode number 377 of the Climate Report. I've been doing this 5 years. I used to buy into all the mainstream nonsense. I used to buy into all the nonsense that wants to hyper-focus on carbon dioxide, make it sound like carbon dioxide is the issue, and it is not the issue. Assuming there's too much carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, which there probably is, it is only a symptom of much deeper problems, and the powers that be don't want us to look at those deeper problems. And that's why they're not talking about water cycles and ecosystems. But item number two here, we have the opportunity to harness evaporative cooling. Walk under a shade tree. What are you experiencing? Why is it cool? It's not just because the shade tree blocks the rays of the sun, that's part of it, but a big part of why it feels cool under a shade tree is that we have evaporative cooling going on. So what is evaporative cooling? Step out of the shower. It feels cool. Why? Because water is evaporating. Step out of the bath or the swimming pool. Why? It's cool. Why is it cool? Because water is evaporating. Go outside on a warm day. You start to sweat. The sweat cools you down. Why does it feel cool? Because your sweat is made mostly of water and the water is evaporating. Exercise, whether it's a warm day or a cool day, when you start to exercise, you start to sweat and it feels, the sweat cools you off. Why? Because water is evaporating. Go under a shade tree or into a forest. Why is it cool? Because water is evaporating. This is evaporative cooling. Evaporative cooling is when water evaporates, it literally carries the heat. It doesn't even carry the heat away. It just changes it into a different form. If you have water vapor is just part of the air. But if you have liquid water, if you go from liquid water to water vapor, it takes a whole heck of a lot of energy to change even a gram of liquid water into water vapor. That's why it's cooling down. It changes it from sensible heat, heat you can feel, into a something called latent heat. Latent heat is not a good name for that because whenever we hear the word heat, we think hot. We think it's something that feels hot, but latent heat is something that does not feel hot. That is the power of evaporative cooling. So how do we utilize the power of evaporative cooling? We need more plants. Take any given space. Let's say you have two sides to your front yard, and one side of your front yard has a shade tree, and the other side has just lawn, and there's nothing there. The shade tree exhibits evaporative cooling, whereas the side that only has a lawn, it's going to be hotter, because the side with the shade tree is just, it has that evaporative cooling going on, and this is the untold story and the untapped opportunity. And what we need is plant cover. In our landscapes, in our farms, in our forests, we have in our desert lands, which are deserts only because we've destroyed the ecosystems. Before it was a desert, it was a grassland. This is true of most deserts in the world. Before it was a desert, it was a forest or a grassland. Which is to say, it doesn't have the plants that it used to have. So in our landscapes, we have the power to let plants grow. We have the power to let trees grow. And we need to know the importance of it because it addresses our climate issues. It restores our water cycles. If we do this on a region-wide basis, it can even bring more rain. And irrespective of what other people are doing, that having more plant matter, even on your landscape, it's going to make it cooler. It's going to make it more drought resistant. It's going to give it more habitat. And, that's regenerative landscaping. We're regenerating the water cycles. We're regenerating the habitat. We have a place for bees, butterflies, and birds. And to do that, We simply need to let plants grow. Opportunity number three in regenerative landscaping. We have the opportunity to experience nature at home. We are only in the last 150 years. If you go back 100 years, most people spent most of their waking hours outside. That has changed because of the Industrial Revolution. And as a species, we're about, as Homo sapiens, we're 200,000 years old as a species. As hominids, we're about 2.5 million years old as a species. The last 100-150 years is a blink of the eye. We have been removed from our natural environment, and most of us spend our time in offices, factories, cars, in our homes. It's unnatural for us to not be engaged with nature. But when we do engage with nature, it has a calming effect. It has a relaxing effect. That's why so many people have hobbies that they do: gardening, they do hiking, they do boating, they do, swimming outdoors, whatever it takes to get outdoors and into more of our natural environment. And if you have a regenerative home landscape, then you can have a little slice of nature right outside your door. When we say nature, I'm not just talking about being out of doors. You can be in a football stadium and be out of doors, but it's not nature. And I don't even really mean outdoors is where you see something green, because a lot of places you see something green, but it's kind of a very sterile type of green, like some of our perfect lawns, some of our parks, etc. When I'm talking about nature, I'm mainly talking about you're going to have animals around. You're going to have insects. Insects are animals. So you're going to have insects. You're going to have birds, butterflies, bees. You're going to have some mammals like raccoons, opossums. You're going to have birds like, hawks, cardinals, blue jays, etc. When we get into a place like that that has animals, then we're in our natural environment. We've spent, all of our evolutionary history until recently, we have spent it closely observing the natural world around us. And when you start closely observing the world around you, especially when it has, insects in it, if nothing else, insects, and the way insects engage with plants, whether it's pollinators, whether it's ants crawling on the plants, whether it's wasps, whether it's, butterflies. And according to Dr. Doug Tallamy, the famed native plant advocate and ecologist, he says that, spending 15 minutes a day in nature has the effect of lowering your blood pressure and making you feel more relaxed. You have more of the right kinds of hormones. You feel happier. And so regenerative landscaping is the opportunity to have that right outside your door. Opportunity number four in regenerative landscaping, we have the opportunity to cool our urban areas. So we have urban areas that are, hotter than the surrounding areas. We have a chance that's called the urban heat dome or the urban heat island effect. We have a chance to mitigate the urban heat island effect by allowing plants to grow in our home landscape. Whenever we mow excessively, you got this big old, 1,000-pound mower running across your landscape, belching out carbon, cutting down all the plant matter. We're doing just the opposite of what needs to be done. If you need some lawn, have some lawn, but the lawn does not need to be wall to wall. You need lawn in places where you're going to walk or play. Lawn should not be the main feature of our design of our home landscape. Opportunity number five in regenerative landscaping, we have the opportunity to grow pollinator food. Pollinator food, I'm mainly talking about that which blooms. 90% of plants bloom, so potentially any plant you have could be pollinator food. It's important that these species be native whenever possible, but it might be trees, it could be bushes, it could be wildflowers, so the so-called herbaceous perennials, which means they live more than 1 year, but they grow back every year. Over the winter, they're going to have a root system down there, but they're going to, you know, things like ironweed, goldenrod, milkweed, brown-eyed Susans, purple coneflowers, all these are herbaceous perennials, and they make for good pollinator food. So the practical advice I have here, if you're just getting started or if you're expanding your garden, is that it's easier to grow plants by transplanting. And maybe you'll buy from a reputable native plant nursery, maybe you'll just get something from a friend, but it's easier to transplant than to grow something from seed. I'm venturing into the whole process of, you know, sowing seeds and trying to get something to grow from seed. Had some success. It's definitely been well worthwhile, but I wouldn't want you to be discouraged trying to grow something from seed and then that fails and then it's another 5 years before you circle back around to trying to grow a pollinator garden. And if you're just getting started and you want to grow something that's easy, I have one word for you, and that's goldenrod. Goldenrod. That's one word. Now, I'm assuming you're in the eastern United States. Maybe you're not. But if you're in the eastern United States, then Canada goldenrod is really easy to grow. It expands rapidly. It is the number one out of all of the flowers and grasses in the database of the National Wildlife Federation, a native plant finder. Out of all the flowers and grasses, the goldenrod is the number one most productive plant for pollinators and also for caterpillars, which are also very important. So to recap, regenerative landscaping is where we are creating a space for living things. We are regenerating our local ecosystems instead of degenerating our local ecosystems. And, we have the opportunity to capture rainfall. We have the opportunity to cool the environment around us. We have the opportunity to make our environment more resilient to things like droughts and heat waves. We have the opportunity to make it so that we experience less in the way of extreme heat and extreme cold. We have the opportunity to grow pollinator food. We have the opportunity to support bees, butterflies, and birds. And we have the opportunity to walk outside our own door and experience nature. That's very important. We need to get back to nature for all sorts of reasons. Oh, look at the time. Bye now.